Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left! Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Sports Beat on the air for this Friday. Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Fort Wayne, Indiana at Parkview Field, where it's been raining all afternoon. The tarp is on the field. Very questionable whether we'll start at 7:05 tonight with South Bend taking on Fort Wayne. Eric Hansen back in our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. Sean Stiers, our fill-in producer right now, also back at our studios. I might as well say hello to everybody.
Well, hello. You got a hello from me, which is Eric. And
I figured that out.
And there are many others who are scrambling that would love to say hello.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. Welcome to all, then. We thank you for joining us, and we thank everybody for listening here on 96.1 WSBT. We've got a full sports beat tonight. Well, almost a full night till 6:50, but I have a feeling we will have a full show since it has been raining nonstop here in Fort Wayne today. Very unlikely we'll have a pregame at 6:50. Sports Beat is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds by Blackthorn Golf Club. And the Blackthorn card, just $99. Buy that card, and you can get up to 80% off rounds of golf, and that includes cart at Blackthorn Golf Club. By Laven Insurance, the agency that rocks. See why at laveninsurance.com. And by Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit Goshen Heart and Vascular. .org. Coming up on the program this evening, we have a mixture of topics to get to. Mike Vrill had a very nice piece on Notre Dame football player Jordan Jenmark Heath. We'll comment on that. The Big Ten basketball season will look a little different coming up this year as they go from 18 to 20 regular season conference games. Is this a positive? We will discuss that. We have a listener choice segment at the bottom of this hour. On Twitter, I asked some of my followers to give us some topic ideas, so we will pass those along coming up in just a little bit. Our My 5 question of the day in about 35 minutes. The top 5 Notre Dame linebacker prospects for 2019 and beyond once Tavon Coney and Drew Tranquil exhaust their eligibility after this season. So we are projecting ahead. Also next hour, we'll set up Major League Baseball for tonight. The Cubs in Cincinnati. The South Bend Cubs are in Fort Wayne. We'll tell you about a new player that's joined South Bend over the last week or so. Sports betting making news, rapid fire, and a whole lot more here on WSBT Radio. First, just some news to get the program started. The Notre Dame softball team is at the NCAA Lexington Regional. They were the first game of the day, and there was a rain delay in the midst of the game, but Notre Dame beat Michigan today 4-1. They had a 3-run seventh inning to build a 4-0 lead. They won 4-1. Alexis Holloway, freshman pitcher, got the win. She probably threw 150 pitches in that game. And Notre Dame will take on either Kentucky or Illinois-Chicago tomorrow at noon in a winner's bracket game in the Lexington Regional. So congrats to Deanna Gump and the Irish softball team for picking up the win over Michigan today. The Notre Dame baseball team lost their second consecutive game down in Kentucky. They're at Louisville, and the Cardinals beat the Irish 5-0. Notre Dame baseball now 24-27, 12-17 in the ACC. WSBT and the South Bend Tribune reporting this earlier today. Eric Brand, Bethel College's all-time leading scorer in basketball after 1 year as head basketball coach at South Bend Riley, has departed. He has taken the varsity boys basketball job at Southport High School near Indianapolis. In 1 year with Riley, with all those Division I players, went 26-1, the only loss at semi-state to the eventual state runner-up, Carmel. So Eric Brand leaves Riley after 1 year. Mark Johnson was done after the year before. He's now the head coach at South Bend St. Joe. And Eric, I was reading the Indy Insider South Bend Tribune article on Brand, and there is some vacancies right now in the South Bend School Corporation. The Tribune reports two of the city's four high schools are now without a boys basketball coach, and three of the schools have a vacancy in their girls basketball program. So a lot of hiring to be done to get ready for the upcoming high school basketball season. And so those are some of the headlines of the day here on WSBT Radio. Now that we have taken care of that, let's shift gears now, Eric, to some college football. And Mike Verrow wrote a very nice piece on Jordan Jenmark Heath, really intriguing player. He is originally from Stockholm, Sweden. Now, you're supposed to play hockey, I think, if you're from Stockholm, Sweden, right?
Or soccer.
And, of course, Callie Ritterwall, who used to play for the Irish hockey team, was the guy who scored arguably the most famous goal in Notre Dame hockey history, beating Michigan in double overtime in the national semifinals in 2008. Jake Evans, who scored with 5 seconds left against Michigan just about a month ago, I guess, is in that conversation now. But anyway, Jordan Jenmark Heath from the same hometown as Callie Ritterwall. As a freshman last year, Eric, Jenmark Heath worked at strong safety, and he was mainly a special teams contributor for the Fighting Irish. Now he's a weak side linebacker, and now he's the backup to Drew Tranquil. First off, how in the world does someone from Stockholm end up playing football? And it sounds like it has something to do with eating a lot of burgers in the middle of the night, trying to get bigger, right?
Yeah, trying to get bigger. I mean, he fell in love with the sport. He had a cousin that played American football, and he kind of fell in love with it, watched YouTube videos, would watch games, NFL games and so forth, and just really gravitated to it. So it was really interesting, and he taught himself a lot of the game by watching the YouTube videos while he was still living in Sweden.
And became a San Diego Charger fan.
Became a San Diego Charger fan, which is odd because that's the city the family ended up in once they moved to America. And again, you know, one of the details is, you know, for I'd say the average person isn't aware of this, but there's five ways to immigrate to the United States. And one is entering something called a diversity lottery, where it's very difficult to win these things. People that try to get into the country, it's based on each country has a certain amount of slots. Some countries have no slots. And you put your name into this and you enter information, and then they kind of pick. And it's very rare that somebody wins these things, or that you know somebody that wins these things.
Interesting.
And so Krister Jenmark, Jordan's stepfather, won the diversity lottery. So that helped get the whole family over to the United States. They relocated to San Diego, oddly enough, near the San Diego Chargers. The family still speaks Swedish at home, but it's just a really cool story. He ended up at a private high school, then switched high schools. And when he made the switch, he ended up going to the same high school that Rick Meyer's kids go to in San Diego. And also San Francisco 49ers GM John Lynch also had kids at the San Diego Cathedral High School.
And now one of Rick's sons is on the Notre Dame lacrosse team.
Right, Morrison, Meyer, and those two were the starting safeties for the football team their senior year. That, you know, I think people forget, too, with Jordan, Notre Dame kind of had a run where they added six players very late in the 2017 recruiting cycle, and three of them had double names. You had Myron Tagovailoa-Amosa, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, Jordan Jenmark Heath. And Jordan was committed to Cal and flipped his commitment very late in the process to Notre Dame. And he's been kind of a revelation, first as a special teams player, then as either a strong safety, and now it looks like it's going to be an inside linebacker.
Okay, let me ask the question a lot of people in our audience might be thinking to themselves. They became San Diego Charger fans in Stockholm, Sweden. Did they move to San Diego for any reason in particular? Did it have anything to do with just following the Chargers and they thought San Diego was a beautiful town? Is there any backstory that you know of?
From what I understand, they really wanted to go to San Diego. Okay. But Krister happened to get a job in San Diego, so it was kind of a benevolent coincidence.
Gotcha.
that ended up happening.
We're talking about Jordan Jenmark Heath. Mike Varell wrote an article about Jordan Jenmark Heath, South Bend Tribune, IndyInsider.com. Eric, as you take a look at the state of this Notre Dame defense, it has the makings of an outstanding defense. And one of the tweaks from last year, Drew Tranquil going from the Rover to the weak side linebacker. And as they rebuild the linebacking core, Jordan Jenmark Heath goes from safety to weak side linebacker. Why do you feel like this move took place for this Fighting Irish defense? And does it make Jenmark Heath a more useful player coming into 2018?
Well, I think this move was made with both 2018 and 2019 in mind. When you get past this season, you are going to lose Tavon Coney and Drew Tranquil. So then you look at the prospects, and you have Jonathan Jones, you have three freshmen, Jack Lamb, Bo Bauer, and Ovi Agufu. You also have two guys that redshirted as freshmen last year that are at the bottom of the depth chart, David Adams and Drew White. I don't see them as being factors in the future. And then you had DJ Morgan, a former safety, who also got moved to linebacker. Mm. So you needed some linebacker depth for this season in case you had an injury, and also in case you want to play a little bit more of a rotation like Notre Dame did last year. But you also had to look at 2019 and say, who in the world are going to be the starting linebackers in 2019? I think there's very high hopes for Jack Lamb and Bo Bauer to develop into starters eventually. But I'm not sure that either one is going to be ready in 2019. So you're probably looking at Jonathan Jones and Jordan Jenmark Heath as your starters if Jordan takes to the linebacker like he did the last week of spring. Now, he's got a lot more to go, but he's an athlete that can certainly put more weight on that frame, on that 6'1" frame. He's an outstanding tackler. He's very intelligent, you know, seems to adapt very easily. So this is, you know, I really like this move as far as a position switch. You know, I'm not sure what's going to happen with DJ Morgan there, but I think Jordan Jenmark Heath is going to be an impactful player for Notre Dame at the linebacker position.
Eric always has the right to veto my five question of the day choice, and today was the day he used the veto, and I can see why. That's why he came up with the top five linebacker prospects after this year, because there is going to be a need of reshuffling of the deck at those particular positions. And Eric, as you take a look at the state of the safety position, I think the Irish coaching staff had a lot of comfort in moving Jenmark Heath from safety to weak side linebacker, because they now know that that position has totally flipped over in terms of talent. Last year at this time, we were thinking, how in the world is this all going to work out? Now, they did not come up with an interception last year. They did not get exposed consistently as we thought might happen. But now, all of a sudden, Eric, that position looks totally different, and you feel really good going into this year. So is that probably the reason why he got moved as well?
Yeah, because they felt like they could afford, and they actually moved Isaiah Robertson to Rover. So they moved a couple people out, well, three if you count DJ Morgan, who was kind of hybriding between Rover and safety. But a few things happened, Darren. First of all, Alohi Gilman came through as good as advertised. That was number one. Number two, moving Houston Griffith from cornerback to safety, and Houston Griffith just kind of taking over in the spring. Yeah, kind of wowing people. The third element was Jalen Elliott really improving as a strong safety. And I think number four, they kind of were counting on all along that Derek Allen, when he arrives in June, he's a big safety at 6'2", 215. That Derek Allen is going to be a factor. So having those four, you add Devin Studstill and Nick Coleman into that mix. Paul Mawala is more of a project guy that really has some great traits in terms of speed that they think can help them down the road from Penn High School. You suddenly look at that group and say, there's something there, you know, and so I think Jordan Genmark Heath, had he stayed at strong safety, probably would have been the starter there. And that's how much they need him at linebacker, and how much they think he can be a really good linebacker by moving him.
You can check out Mike Varell's article on Jordan Genmark Heath, South Bend Tribune, IndyInsider.com. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. It is 26 minutes after the top of the hour. Coming up next, we'll get to our listener choice segment. We have picked up several ideas from listeners on my Twitter account, 961 SportsBeat, and we will discuss those coming up next, including one from Dave that I'm kind of baffled right now on the three answers that he wants me to give. I'm hoping Eric has better answers than me because I'm struggling right now.
Yeah.
And we'll explain what all that means coming up in just a second. That's what we call a tease on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Fort Wayne. Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune, back in our WSBT studios. And again, our thanks to Sean Stiers, who is our utility man. He is filling in as our producer during this segment. Take a bow, Sean. Please, take a bow.
Bow. A backstage bow.
Oh, thank you very much. And if you want to answer any of these questions, feel free, because I need help on one of them.
Uh-oh.
Because I'm really stumped. All right, so we have asked our listeners on my Twitter account, 961 SportsBeat, to come up with topics for us to talk about. So I've jotted down several, and here is what we have come up with. Now, the first one's from Patrick, and it's in response to this ACC coach's plan to expand the NCAA men's basketball tournament from 68 to 72 teams. Patrick says, I recommend cutting to 32 teams, going to four 10-minute quarters, and banning all timeouts in the last 2 minutes. Now, you don't necessarily have to comment on that, or if you want to, feel free, but
does Patrick actually like basketball? That's what I want to know. I don't get that.
Well, I understand the four 10-minute quarters. The women's game doing that, actually, I kind of liked it in a way. I didn't think I would, but I actually did. It kind of changes the way you look at fouls. But, guys, we talk about this now every year, and we talked about it this year. The field is watered down with 68 teams. There are a lot of bad teams that get in. There are a lot of bad teams that do not get in that are on the bubble. The bubble is full of bad teams. So why in the world do we want to put more bad teams into the NCAA tournament and create a second first four? Guys, I just don't think it's a good idea. 68, I'm fine with the way it is right now. It stinks. Notre Dame was team number 69 last year, but I'm not going to base my opinion on that. I'm just basing it like it was Texas State, A&M, Providence University, that was 69. 68 is just fine. 72, we are just getting into bad basketball, and I don't think that's good for the tournament.
Well, I don't like either of the recommendations about the 32 teams or the 72. Leave it at 68. I wouldn't mind seeing it go back to 64, 65, to be honest with you. The four-minute quarters, I had that in the NIT game that I covered.
Yeah.
With Notre Dame men, and I was okay with it. And banning all timeouts in the last 2 minutes, what I'd like to ban in the last 2 minutes is looking at the referees' butts for 10 minutes as they look at a monitor. That would be what I would want to cut out.
Well, we could ask the cameraman to shoot something different if that would help. We'll treat the referees like the person who now runs on the field in a baseball game. You don't show them to give them headlines.
Well, the thing about it is when teams are out of timeouts, it gives them a timeout when they sit there and stare at that monitor for so long. I'm not quite sure what the answer is, so I sound like a whiner, but go ahead, Sean.
It's even worse in the NBA, though, because I was watching the playoff game the other night, and they were, because they go to look at whether it's a flagrant and all that kind of stuff, and it should not take this long. It should be pretty obvious.
It should be fast.
Yeah, exactly. And it's even worse there, but I do agree with that. Personally, I like the quarters. I don't like the resetting of the fouls after quarters. They don't do that in the NBA, so I don't understand why they have to do that in college. I'm gonna save my answer, though, because this is rapid fire in the second hour, Darren, so I don't want to blow my answer. I know what your opinion is now on the field, so I'll save mine for the second hour for rapid fire.
Hey, my opinion changed from hour to hour. Who knows? See, I kind of like the fouls going back to zero. I mean, it's becoming a free throw shooting contest in college basketball. Now, we'll save that. We'll save that.
Okay.
All right, next listener choice segment. This comes from Kevin. Why won't the White Sox commit to bringing up Eloy Jimenez? This is a fascinating question. This is a big-time topic in Chicago radio. And, of course, Eloy is the former South Bend Cub in 2016. And he was traded at the deadline last year, or actually before the deadline, by the Chicago Cubs to the Chicago White Sox in a deal that, of course, included Jose Quintana, or Quintana, going to the Chicago Cubs. Now, Eloy's considered one of the top prospects in baseball, and he's been tearing it up lately. He's hitting .309 at AA with a .342 on-base percentage, 7 home runs and 28 driven in, and he's hitting .309, and he's won for his last 11 to drop to .309. You know, I had the great pleasure to watch him. I got to know him on the bus rides, and a very hard worker. I think he's the guy that will provide average and power at the major league level. I remember him in the Midwest League at a young age of 19. He had as good an understanding of the strike zone as any 22 or 23-year-old you were going to see. So based on the fact that he had that uncanny ability to understand the strike zone, I think he will have an easier transition to Major League Baseball. Guys, I'll just leave it with this. If the White Sox have a strong clubhouse, if it is a positive clubhouse, it is not a negative clubhouse, I don't see any reason why after the All-Star break you do not bring up Eloy Jimenez, because I just think he has the ability right now to succeed at the Major League level. It is now just extra seasoning for Eloy Jimenez at AA. If you can hit a AA, you can hit in the majors, and right now he is showing he can do so. And if he keeps it up at this pace, guys, by July 1st, there's no reason why, in my opinion, he should be in the minors. He should be with the White Sox.
Well, I know that Mike Varell would like him to be called up Saturday because Mike's going to the game.
I've got tickets in July, so I would like to see him in person too.
Well, here's my thought on maybe why they're not, and I'm not saying this is great strategy or whatever. You know, they're 11-29. Don't you get a good draft choice by being the rottenest of these tanking teams?
You know what I think about that. I know. So you're asking the wrong guy.
Here's the other part, and we talk about this with Cardinal prospects sometimes, is do you want to start his arbitration free agent clock in a year that they're 11-29, or wait another year and then have an extra year of contract control? That would be my only kind of thought on not bringing him up. Otherwise, I'd say bring him up.
I think that's a great point, because I think that's maybe the best point of the whole thing, because if you can wait until mid-April next year and you basically save 2 years
right
on his contract clock. And even, and I understand Darren's point of view where he doesn't want teams tanking, and I don't think that it's necessarily great for the game either, but, you know, trust the process. That's what this whole thing is supposed to be about, right? Because they're this bad because they're trying to get that pick and they're still trying to rebuild the organization. So, but I think that's a great point by Eric about the arbitration clause.
But see, here's the thing. The only thing I'll say to that is you're a major market team.
Yeah.
Now, you're not going to be able to spend like the Cubs because you don't have the revenue that the Cubs have. But you're still a major market team. And if you can't afford Eloy in 6 years, then you know what? Shame on you. You should go tank a little more and be bad for another 6-7 years, because it makes no sense. I mean, at some point, you have to try to start building something and winning, and you're only going to frustrate your player by leaving him stuck in the minors when he's ready to go. So let's see what happens the next couple of months. If he tails off, it's the end of the conversation. But look at the Blue Jays. They got a 19-year-old in Vladimir Guerrero Jr. who's hitting .410 at AA right now, and we're going through the whole Super 2, if you wait. No, put the guys in the majors. It's time for them to play. If they're good enough to be there, let them play. Just like in the Bad News Bears at the Astrodome, let them play.
That's right.
I mean, come on, the White Sox can afford Eloy in 6 years, right?
Well, you would hope so. But
I mean, I would hope the fans would come back.
Well, he may not want to be afforded by them. He may
say,
"I'm
going to
go play
for another
day."
And if you bring him up right now, you're really just doing it to try to throw your fans a little bit of a bone. It's like, Okay, we still stink, but here's this one guy who's kind of good but, you can watch, and here's our future. But back to what Eric said, you're taking away from your potential future and how long you can keep all those guys together once they get that young pool of talent up to the major league level, and they want to do it all at the same time, I'm sure.
Now, I know Yoel Moncada, one of the top prospects in baseball before he was traded from the Red Sox to the White Sox. He had spent some time with the Red Sox, so his clock was going, but the White Sox brought up fairly quickly, and now he's a regular in their lineup. He's only 22 years old. Eloy's 21. So you're starting to get your prospects to the majors. At some point, you got to let them go. You got to let them play. You got to let them grow. I mean, the Cubs did that, not with Bryant necessarily, but a lot of their other guys, you know, came up in, 2015, and they started growing, and look what happened. Actually, it would have been 2014. They started bringing some of those guys up. Not Bryant, of course. But look what happened. They were seasoned, and they were ready to roll in 2015 and shocked everybody how good they were.
Why not bring him up to Charlotte at Triple-A, where they don't have a player batting above 286 and they don't have a player with more than four home runs?
I don't need to see Eloy at Triple-A.
Okay.
Well, double I'm A sure is
the Charlotte
where the
people would be happy
yeah,
about
I know.
That.
You could sell
but
some
double A is
Charlotte.
Where the pitching is. If you can hit double A pitching, you can hit major league pitching. That's been the saying for so long. Triple A is fillers. Guys you keep around just in case you have an injury. So that's just the way I look at it.
Well, I would think you'd at least move him to triple A and so at least you can say, okay, we're moving him through the organization rather than just saying, nope, we're going to leave him. We're going to stick him there in double A for a year, year and a half, whatever it happens to be.
I'm glad we're debating this because I know what the next question is, and it's harder.
Well, I know I'm stalling too because I don't have a good answer right now. I got to be perfectly honest. I was trying to find one more piece of information before we left this. Chris Bryant with the Cubs. Now, the numbers aren't broken down, but he played 7 games at AAA in 2015, and I don't have the breakdown in 14. He was between AA and AAA, so he spent a little time, of course, at AAA Iowa. But with my guy Eloy, I think he can skip it, and we'll have to see what the White Sox end up doing. All right, listener choice segment. Here is the third question. Maybe we should put our heads together on this and try to come up with three rather than everybody coming up with three. This is Dave's question. The top three coaches to replace Brian Kelly after he wins the national championship and retires. Oh, now, first, Eric, if Brian Kelly wins the national championship this year, is he retiring?
He might.
Really? Okay. All right. Fair enough. So let's put our heads together. Let's answer Dave's question. Three coaches that, if you were the AD, basically, you would try to replace Brian Kelly with after he wins a national championship and retires. Does anybody come to mind right away?
No. And I mean, and again, when I saw the question, I didn't know what the time frame was because the people you would look at and the people that are available would change every year. And so, you know, whoever's the hot coach this year may not be available 2 years from now or a year from now. So it's my least favorite question I get in chat. If Brian Kelly gets fired, who are the candidates? If Brian Kelly retires, who are the candidates? I hate the question because my mind doesn't think that way. If Brian Kelly were really on the chopping block, if it was imminent that he was going, then I'm coming up with that list pretty fast.
Dave's being positive. He just won the national championship. He's going to Disney World.
Even that, I mean, but he didn't say he wins the national championship this year. He could mean 2 years from now. I just don't think there's a clear-cut guy. I mean, you could say, oh, well, you know, people always have that dream that Urban, that yeah. this is really Urban's right. dream job and that he'll come to Notre Dame. I don't see that happening or that, you know, he's tired of winning at Ohio State.
John Gruden will challenge. Have to turn down the job first before Urban gets a chance.
Yeah, John Gruden, Bob Stoops. I mean, they're not going to hire a guy that's in his late 50s.
No.
So you would have to think somebody young. You could think of somebody with a Notre Dame connection, but, you know, how many of these guys have truly had a Notre Dame connection?
Right.
That Notre Dame has hired, let's say, since era. Charlie Weiss, And you could say Bob Davey because he was already on the staff, but Lou didn't have a connection. Era didn't have a connection, right, other than he was beating Notre Dame when he was at Northwestern. Devine didn't, you know, Willingham didn't. So the Notre Dame connection part doesn't seem to fit there. You're looking for a guy that has experience and success as a head coach in the FBS level. And you particularly want somebody that has expertise on the both sides of the ball, I would think. And I don't think that there's a lot of people that jump out. You would have said, for example, why this question is hard. A year ago, you would have had Row the Boat up at Minnesota, that guy. He would have been, a lot of people loved him. Now, after being at Minnesota a year, he's not a hot coach anymore. He may get that way again, but he's not now.
But he's like, honestly, he's one of the few names that actually came to mind because he's still fairly young. He has head coaching experience. What if he wins 9 games at Minnesota this year? Then is he a viable
guy? Well, I'd say he's in the West. I'd like to see their schedule. Depends on your crossover games.
Fair. Yeah, that's fair.
But their first year, I don't think that they were a better team with him in his first year than they were the year before.
They didn't seem like it, but I don't know enough about Minnesota's roster to really know what was there.
I think he's recruiting well, but again, I don't think that would play at Notre Dame. I'm blanking on the Memphis coach's name, Norvell. Yeah. I like him. You know, you could say
Fuentes at Virginia Tech's very popular.
Yeah, Fuente at Virginia Tech.
Fuente.
If it were a few years from now and Mike Sanford was wildly successful at Western Kentucky, maybe he gets involved.
What about Brom at Purdue?
I like Brom at Purdue, but again, you know, how is he? I'd like to see how he's going to build Purdue's defense over time. You know, Joe Tiller was able to be pretty good on both sides of the ball, but there's not somebody that just jumps out and grabs you and, I don't think, and you say, well, that's the guy. That's the up-and-coming. People mention Pat Fitzgerald as well. I mean, maybe if it were after this season, that makes some sense. But I think, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road doesn't make sense. Is he going to win more games at Notre Dame than he is winning at Northwestern with similar academic standards? I don't know. I think he's a good coach, but I don't know that he's the answer at Notre Dame. And fit is so important with the job. You can't just say, wow, this is a hot coach and he doesn't get Notre Dame and what it stands for and all the stuff that you have to put up with as the Notre Dame coach that have nothing to do with football.
Right.
You have to get somebody that buys into that and is willing to not only tolerate it, but kind of embrace it. So, you know, maybe that guy will kind of emerge, but I just, when I look around, I mean, the guys that I think would be a fit, like, for example, David Shaw, I don't think David Shaw wants to come to Notre Dame.
Right. Dude. He's in a pretty good spot.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
For not liking the question, you gave a very, very good answer, thorough answer.
Okay.
And I don't think you can go with the hot coordinator guy either.
I think a coordinator is a huge mistake.
Right.
I think we learned that.
Yes.
That doesn't work. And why I say, you know, knowledge of football on both sides of the ball, Tyrone Willingham had never been a coordinator. He went from a position coach to a head coach. And when things broke down, either on offense or defense, he had to count on his coordinators to fix them. He couldn't step in and help greatly with those solutions with Bill Diedrich and Kent Bear. Now, it was the offense that was breaking down much more than the defense, but he didn't have the solution. So I think you need somebody that's got enough seasoning as a head coach that they're going to be able to handle the media, handle all the demands of the head coach, and handle the X's and O's, because it's just different at Notre Dame.
If he had the head coaching experience, a guy like Mike Elston would be the perfect personality.
I would agree with you, but he doesn't have the head coaching experience.
All right, next up in our listener choice segment, Eric, this is just for you. Somebody named Tyler, I think you might know him. Uh-huh. Why pumpkin is an ingredient that should be cherished and not chastised?
okay, but that's not exactly a question. That's kind of posing something to me.
Yes.
My question is that this Tyler person has a very unsophisticated palate.
Are you not a pumpkin guy? Are you anti-pumpkin?
I'm anti-pumpkin, yes.
Oh, okay.
We've had this discussion. Tyler, Tyler, we have something called a taco bar a couple times a year, and it's the most fabulous pitch-in supper in the history of the world.
And I've not been invited yet.
You have been invited, but you're always out of town. We have it on purpose when you're out of town. But Tyler brought pumpkin rolls to the taco bar.
I would have paid to come to taco bar that night if I had known Tyler was bringing pumpkin rolls.
Well, he said the ladies love his pumpkin rolls, so I don't know what that says about you.
I can see that.
I just think pumpkin is a made-up flavor. It's just kind of like carrot cake. You know, carrot cake shouldn't be a cake. It should be a salad.
Okay.
All right.
So glad Tyler asked that question.
Okay.
Let's move along.
Hey, we got into sea urchin the other night. Mike Varell wants me to eat sea urchin. And I said I would rather eat pumpkin.
Okay. Wow. All right.
Yeah, this is what we talk about in the office, not Brian Kelly's successor.
All right. I'm going to skip the hockey one just because we're getting short on time so I can have everybody participate in the last one. Tony wants to know, you, Darvish, will he win at least 10 games for the Cubs this year? Through seven starts, he's 0-3.
10.
I'm going to say no. I think he's going to get the flu too much.
It has not gone well for him so far.
He'll get better, but I don't think he wins 10.
Yeah, that's a good number, I think. I would agree. I think if he's fortunate, he might land right on 10, but I'll say under as well.
I mean, we are now in the middle of May, and you don't have a win, so to me, it's so much more difficult to win in the majors now because starters do not go as long.
Right.
He has not been able to consistently go five innings to qualify for the win. So with that being said, I took the under as well. I'm going to say he will not get to 10 victories this year, despite having an offense that can win you a lot of games.
Let me ask you this. Will he even have 15 decisions by the end of the year? Because that's one thing as well. When you're coming out of the game by the fifth or sixth inning, who knows what's going to happen once you give it over to the bullpen? It can get you off the hook. It can also steal a win or two away from you.
That's a good number.
I think it hinges on whether he likes pumpkin.
Maybe that'll cure the cramping.
He probably likes the sea urchin himself.
Yeah, let me know how that turns out, Eric. Yikes.
Yeah.
All right. Those are some of the questions we had today for a listener choice segment. We'll do it again next week. We have a My 5 question of the day next, 5:52 at WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
The top five Notre Dame linebacker prospects for 2019 and beyond once Tavon Coney and Drew Tranquil exhaust their eligibility after this season. Eric, answer number five.
Well, I'm going to go with a guy that's not playing linebacker currently. He's a rover, and that's Asmar Bilal. He's 6'2", 225. I think that, you know, as a fifth-year senior, if he decides to come back and Notre Dame decides to have him, I think he would be a good depth guy. I don't think he would start, but I think he would be a good insurance policy.
Number four.
I'm going to go with Jonathan Jones. Jonathan made a jump in his play this spring to get himself as the number two middle linebacker behind Tavon Coney. He's 6'2", 222, so he's a little bit undersized, packs a pretty good wallop for a guy that's a little bit thinner. But I don't see him having a huge ceiling. I think he's probably risen to his level. He's a guy you can count on, but he is not a game-changing type of linebacker.
Top linebacker prospects 2019 and beyond, number three.
This guy was the hardest to place, and he could be anywhere from 1 to 3. But I'm going to go with Jordan Genmark Heath just because we haven't seen enough of him yet to really gauge where that ceiling is for him at linebacker. But the fact they moved him from potentially being a starting safety to an inside linebacker spot means the coaching staff thinks he has starting potential.
Number two.
I'm going to go with the guy that has the highest recruiting hype, but he missed a lot of last year because of an injury, and it's Jack Lamb. He was an early enrolled freshman, 6'4", 216, really seems to have a great feel for the game. Not big enough right now. He has to make friends with Matt Bayless, Notre Dame's director of sports performance. And a lot of that, again, was because he was injured last year. He couldn't lift. He couldn't get bigger. I think as Jack kind of grows into that 6'4 frame, he may be one or two on this list, but right now I've got him number two. I think he's going to be really good down the road.
And Eric, 2019 and beyond, your number one linebacker prospect at Notre Dame.
There's a lot of split decisions on this, but I kind of go with Tyler James. Tyler really likes Bo Bauer, and Bo, of the three freshman early enrollees, really impressed the most, had really good instincts. Again, part of his deal is he's 216 pounds, which is very light for a middle linebacker, considering Tavon Coney is 6'1", 238. Bo is 6'3". He's just a guy that, you know, when you look up in the dictionary and look at linebacker, his picture and many others are there, but he's the kind of guy that would have his picture in there. So I like where he's going, where he's headed.
That's our My Five question of the day. Let's take a one-minute break, come back with what's coming up in the Tribune next on WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, Tom Noe has a column talking with Eric Brand, who's leaving Riley boys basketball coaching after a year. Tim Creason has a feature from last night's Penn sectional track meet. We have ND softball beating Michigan, who's the 17th ranked team in the country in the NCAA regional. Lots of other Indiana tennis and track roundups and much, much more.
Great weekend, Eric. Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in. He's going to throw deep for T.Y. He's got it.
Flips to Jenkins. Three for the win. It's good. Villanova wins it.
He dives. It is a touchdown. New England wins.
Adios. Cubs win their ninth in a row.
Miles Boykin is in the end zone.
The Irish have come back.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
It is 8 minutes after the top of the hour. Budweiser's weekday sports beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. I'm Darren Pritchett from Parkview Field in Fort Wayne, where the South Bend Cubs and the Fort Wayne Tin Caps plan on igniting a three-game series here tonight. We are scheduled for a 7:05 first pitch, 6:50 pregame on WSBT radio. Things have improved. There's still a light rain falling, but the tarp has been off the field for about 20 minutes. They're getting the field ready as we speak right now. We have not heard any differently that we're going to have a delay. Maybe it might be a few minutes as they still have not lined the diamond, but they still have about 55 minutes to take care of the diamond that is in really, really good shape here in Fort Wayne. So I guess there is an outside chance. After all, we'll get the pregame started at 6:50 tonight here on WSBT Radio, as South Bend plays game 7 of a long road trip. It feels like it's a long road trip, but we just had a lot of games in a short amount of time. 6 games in 4 days in Eastlake, Ohio, and now 3 in 3 days here in Fort Wayne. Sean Stiers back at our WSBT studios. And again, we thank him for chipping in, helping produce the first hour of the program. I don't know, are you like a player manager now? Are you announcer / producer?
I must be. A little bit of everywhere, splitting time. This has been a weird week for Sports Beat anyway, yeah, because of what you were just talking about, just with the double headers and the early, what, the 6:30 start time, I guess, on Tuesday, and then you had the early game yesterday. So it's just been a weird week all the way around. It was only fitting that I should come in and pitch in a little bit for the first hour, too.
Who are you, by the way? I've kind of forgotten.
Yeah, I know, right? When's the last time we saw each other? talk, for that matter.
It's been a little while, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, it's been kind of a weird week, but South Bend will be home all next week, so we'll be back at Four Winds Field for Sports Beat all next week here on 96.1 WSBT. And South Bend, 3-3 on this road trip right now. They continue to get really good starting pitching, but the hitting has just been not up to what you need to be an above 500 baseball team. Yesterday was the first time in 12 starts a South Bend Cubs starter had given up more than two runs in his outing. And Brandon Little had five shutout innings yesterday, then gave up five in the sixth. Otherwise, the starting pitching has given this team every chance to win games, but unfortunately, in this 13-game stretch where the starters have an ERA of 2.67, they're just 7-6, and that's just not good enough. In fact, the last two games, South Bend has stranded 15 runners and went 1-for-16 with runners in scoring position, and that's how you lose back-to-back games after winning three of the first four in Lake County. So it is an offense that we wondered at the start of the year how much consistently would they be able to produce offensively, and it's been a little hit and miss, kind of like expected. The starting pitching has gotten better, but the hitting just has not been up to snuff, where this team is 17-21 right now, taking on a Fort Wayne team that is 17-22. So we'll see what happens tonight. And a guy to watch when you come out to Four Winds Field next week is Nelson Velasquez, who joined South Bend recently, 19-year-old outfielder, number 9 prospect in the Cubs system, according to MLB Pipeline, number 10 by Baseball America. Now he's hitting 184 right now through his first 10 games. Potential is there. Still trying to get settled in the Midwest League, but an intriguing player to watch. And if he gets going, the South Bend offense then looks a lot deeper. Otherwise, this is a very thin lineup at this particular time. So the Cubs in Fort Wayne coming up tonight at 7:05 on WSBT Radio. Major League Baseball, the Cubs and the Reds in Cincinnati, game one of a four-game weekend series. You know, Sean, I got to give credit to John Lester. I wondered if he was going to be the number 3 or 4 starter on this team after a very hit-and-miss 2017, but he has pitched extremely well, a 2.66 ERA entering this matchup against the Cincinnati Reds. So with Darvish not living up to the money given to him, John Lester is kind of like the 28-year-old John Lester right now.
Yeah, he really is. He's going to help pick up the slack, and he and Hendricks have been about as the most consistent two starting pitchers that they've had so far this season. And he gave them a solid almost 6 innings last week against the White Sox in that victory, and he's been over, with the exception of his first start, I think it was, mm-hmm. he's been
Miami
at least 5 plus innings in every start. So he's kind of do a double take, because the ERA started out a little high, I think, because of that start against Miami, and then won a little bit later against Pittsburgh. But other than that, it's been steadily coming down, and he settled in at 2.66. And, I mean, that's obviously what you want from your veteran, especially when things have been so up and down, not just from a pitching standpoint, but from an offensive standpoint as well. A veteran guy like John Lester, just the anchor of that staff for the last few years. And again, that's what you expect from a guy like John Lester.
You mentioned Lester and Kyle Hendricks, two of the top starters right now. Was that Kyle Elite Hendricks, or did you just say Kyle Hendricks?
Well, he didn't look too elite against the White Sox last year. He looked solid against the White Sox, but he wasn't
solid.
Very elite.
Fair enough. I just thought I'd throw that in there.
I've thought about that ever since that night. Yeah, I kept going back. Is he elite? What is he?
Yeah, if you weren't with us recently, there was a debate whether he is elite or not, and I believe only, 9 or 10 guys have a better ERA since 2014 than Kyle Hendricks. Well, a doubleheader tomorrow in Cincinnati. Hendricks and Quintana will start for the Cubs, and then Yu Darvish will get the baseball on Sunday. It sounds like they're reworking his mechanics right now, trying to get him going. He is 0-3 so far this year and cramped up in his last start in Atlanta. Just seems like it's something different every time with Darvish. And playing in an offensive ballpark like Cincinnati, and a doubleheader coming up tomorrow, The Cubs have sent down former South Bend Cub David Bodie to AAA Iowa, so the infielder goes back to the Iowa Cubs. And Randy Rosario is a reliever that will join Chicago and Cincinnati. Good stuff at AAA Iowa this year. 17 and a third innings, a 0.52 ERA. Made his major league debut with the Twins last year, only got 2 1/3 innings, and he gave up 8 earned runs in that short time with Minnesota. So Randy Rosario joins the Cubs bullpen for the 4 games this weekend at Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati. And Bodie has done some great things at Iowa this year. He's had some key hits for the Chicago Cubs so far this year. So those are some of the baseball headlines. And again, you look at the American League Central right now. My goodness. Cleveland is 21-21. There was a time a couple of days ago had Detroit beat Cleveland. Detroit would have been in first place in the American League Central. Who would have thought that at the start of the year?
I know. And I mean, looking at how Justin, I said this to somebody the other day, how Justin Verlander has pitched this year for Houston. I mean, if he was with the Tigers right now, they would be in first place.
And the Tigers got to be thinking, could we get a little more now for Verlander? I know they like a couple of the pieces they got in the deal with Houston, but boy, Verlander's been outstanding. Remember the conversation? Should the Cubs go after him? Is he too expensive? Boy, if you had a do-over, instead of paying Darvish all that money, throw it at Verlander, and how different this whole situation might look. And who knows, maybe last year looks a whole lot different after the trade deadline if the Cubs could have pulled off that deal rather than Houston.
Well,
but at the time, that was a huge contract to take on.
They've got good pine tar for those pitchers down there in Houston, though, right?
That's the debate, isn't it? Thank you, Trevor Bauer.
Yeah.
Well, if he had pine tar or whatever, he shut down the Angels the other night. An incredible shutout from Verlander, who just continues to give Houston a chance to win every time he starts. And Houston, 28-17, leading the AL West by 2.5 over the Halos. But again, in the Central, Cleveland is 21-21. You've got Detroit a game and a half back. Minnesota starting to come alive. They're a game and a half back. Kansas City, 8.5, and the White Sox are 9 games back. So you got a situation where Cleveland's allowing everyone to kind of hang around and gain confidence. You keep waiting on the Indians to ignite. It has not happened as of yet. There's a lot of people in the American League East that would like to transfer to the American League Central. Right now, look at Toronto. They're 500 right now, and they're 8 games out of first place. If they're in the AL Central, they're tied for first place.
Here's the bright side. We were talking about the White Sox in the first hour. Here's the bright side.
Okay.
Because they're sitting in last place, 9 games back in the Central. Kansas City is just a half game in front of them. The Royals aren't even trying to be bad.
I know.
They just are this bad right now. It's amazing, as someone who's followed that team, how far off they have fallen in just 3 years. It is just absurd.
Unfortunately, that's the life in the small market.
Yep.
When you treat yourself as a small market, and again, they just can't afford those big contracts. And when they give out that big contract, they need to hit it. And Alex Gordon is the poster child big for that conversation.
Yep.
Just unreal. But they got Moustakas, who they can probably ship to someone near the trade deadline. Although I was reading something today, it's a pretty saturated third base market. There may not be a whole lot of teams in search of a third baseman.
Yeah.
But I love Moustakas.
I do too.
I wanted him on my team and didn't happen. But he's just a very solid player. I know the on-base percentage isn't perfect, and I'm an on-base guy. I was only .314 last year, but a good glove. Power has come on. I thought he would have been a really nice secondary piece in my team's lineup, but that did not happen. And so Moustakas, strangely enough, ends up back in Kansas City playing for the Royals this year. All right, that's a little baseball conversation. 19 minutes after 6 o'clock here on WSBT Radio. I don't know if you have touched on this at all with Eric, but just the other day it was really interesting to hear that Supreme Court decision legalizing betting on college and professional sports. Mm-hmm. And many states will have the opportunity to take advantage of this. There's a lot of states that have wanted this. I think New Jersey is front and center. Now, I've read that it might take a little while for Indiana to get something like this in place, although there has been, I believe, a state senator, a representative from Terre Haute that has brought up some things in the past. But a 25-year-old federal law basically goes away when the justices ruled 7-2 that you can have the wagering on sports at the professional and collegiate level. And I'm not sure if with the NCAA being in Indianapolis, if that is a factor in how quickly something might come to Indiana. It may not. It may. I really don't have a good answer for that. But are you concerned about sports and now having this betting being more widespread other than just being a Nevada thing or the grassroots mom-and-pop businesses that, of course, are all across the country that have not been legal? Do you feel like we're putting sports in a very difficult spot?
Well, I think it is a slippery slope no matter what. I have always wondered why, you know, you can go to Vegas and bet on all this stuff. There's a lot of money that changes hand out there in Vegas, but you couldn't in the rest of the country. The biggest concern I have, and I'm curious to see what you think about it, is college sports specifically. Because, I mean, there are already both colleges and conferences who are trying to figure out how they're going to monetize this. They're all in on this because they're going to make more money on it. And I just think specific to college sports that it's big trouble waiting to happen because there's already so much money, as well documented, that's being made off college sports by both the NCAA and the schools. And so I just look at it, I think about it like this. Now, so college basketball and football are making all this money. So now, okay, maybe the eighth guy in the rotation on a college basketball team. He's not making any money off his games, but all these other people are. So now his roommate back in the dorm can go make all the bets he wants. So what's to stop Mr. Eighth Man and his roommate from making a little extra cash on this, right? I mean, all he's got to do is say, okay, the first time I go to the free throw line, I'm going to miss this free throw. And then they've got a little revenue stream going. So I think it's really tough when you, if college athletics, if it's legal to bet on that stuff.
I guess I feel like those things could be happening right now.
You have to go to Vegas to do it, so.
Well, there's still people bet all the time. There's bookies in our area, and there's bookies here, there, and everywhere. So, I mean, you could still do something like that now in the past few years. I mean, it still is possible. You know, I totally get what you're saying about college. I just think all of these entities have to realize that the number of people that are going to stay focused on their sport and watch their sport, knowing that they have money placed on the game, that's going to be a huge plus for all of these organizations. Because I would assume most people that they put a few dollars on a game, they're going to want to watch it to kind of live the highs and the lows and the drama. I'm sure some people put the money down, don't even watch the game, and at the end of the night, they check to see what happens. But I think it is something that adds extra interest. I think it's very similar to fantasy football. I don't know how many people in our area would be interested in the Chargers taking on the Buccaneers in a football game.
Right.
But if you had two fantasy players, or if you had your opponent had Jameis Winston, you might tune in compared to not being involved in fantasy football. So I think it does bring more interest. I'm not sure how much, but obviously it's going to bring more. And yeah, I do have some concerns about the college game, but I just feel like if it's going to happen, it's already happening right now. Sure, the chances increase with this all being legalized and more people wanting to get their hand involved in things like this, but I think it's just one of the things you have to deal with in going through this process. It's unfortunate, but I think if you legalize collegiate and pro betting elsewhere, it's going to add a lot more interest to all these sports.
I do think that, and I've been thinking about this like from the baseball and hockey perspectives, because you've got a couple sports who are trending more and more toward being more regional than national as far as TV and stuff like that, and the demographic keeps trending up in terms of the age for those sports. And so now you take your phone and sit in the stands and watch the game, and you can bet on balls and strikes and hits and outs and shots and goals and the whole thing. And I've got to think that helps from an overall interest, and that's going to help you maybe skew a little bit younger, because I would imagine you're going to have a lot of young guys in their 20s who are going to be really into this, kind of going back to what you were saying, like with the fantasy connection. There's going to be a lot more reason to be interested in some of these other sports that maybe don't get the bigger overall interest and get a little bit younger demographic. I think that it could be good for the professional sports in the long run.
You know, I'm not a better.
I'm not either, for the record.
And I have a friend that goes to Las Vegas every year. In the last 2 years, he said, give me two football games. No pressure. If I lose, I lose. But just give me your two picks for the week. So I've done it now two straight years, and I'm 4-0. Oh. So I'm thinking maybe I'm in the wrong business. And I'm not kidding you. This is a true story, absolute true story. When South Bend was in Peoria, I have a good friend that lives in nearby Bloomington Normal, and after one of the games, he actually came to the game. We went back to his house. I went to one of his golf outings. We had a chance to chat in the golf cart. One of his buddies at the country club, of course it's the country club, it's not just the public course, it's the country club, a guy found out what I do for a living, and he goes, I've got a deal for you. I'm like, okay. He's like, I will give you $100 a week for an entire year, and all you have to do is give me one game to bet on every week. And if you're wrong, you still get the $100. And I'm thinking, well, this deal's probably too good to be true, but I just think it's weird when you don't know the person. It'd be kind of awkward if you lose like 4 weeks in a row. So I said no thank you to the offer, but I was like, seriously? Just because I'm in sports radio, you think I know what I'm talking about on everything? Come on, give me a break. But that was a very nice offer. That would have been a nice revenue stream, I guess.
Really nice offer. I mean,
but I'm not right. Jimmy the Greek, so.
Yeah, you start missing a few, and then the guys are going to turn the screws to it. He's like, I'm gone.
Well, when my buddy said, hey, he's 4-0 the last 2 years, of course, that just enhanced the conversation right. Even farther. So, and I reminded my friend we were going to take a third game last year, and I said, no, let's don't do that. I just got a bad feeling. We were going to take early in the year the Chiefs at home over Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh ended up winning that game outright. So, see, I would have been wrong there had we stuck with it, but we changed our minds.
There
so,
you go. There you go.
It does add a little more interest to a lot of games that you're not interested in, and it's just eerie how Las Vegas gets these games so close. There was an empty net goal in an NHL game last night. It was Vegas. It was Vegas and Winnipeg the other night. The over-under was like 5, and the Golden Knights from Vegas scored an empty netter, I think with under 10 seconds to go, and that made it the over.
Wow.
So it's just remarkable how they are so close on everything.
Yep.
Let's take a timeout. Rapid fire comes your way next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. I'm Darren Pritchett in Fort Wayne. Sean Steyer's back at our WSBT studios. And, Sean, take it away. You've got rapid fire.
All right, Darren, I pretty much know what your answer to this is going to be, but you can kind of repeat it. Buy or sell the ACC's proposal to expand the NCAA tournament to 72 teams.
It just really doesn't make any sense to me. If we had quality teams that are on the bubble, that would make a difference in the tournament. I think I'm all for it. I guess the argument is, well, look at Syracuse last year. They were the last team in, and they won a couple of games in the tournament. I understand that, but that doesn't mean you deserve to be in the tournament because you win two games, because there's teams on the outside looking in that could have done the same thing. So I guess, Sean, I don't want to water down the field anymore. There was a time where I actually liked the idea of 96. I'm like, what's better, NCAA basketball on TV or soap operas? Now, I probably would be argued by many people that soap operas is still better during the day, but I just don't want to see average teams getting rewarded, getting into the tournament. So we're getting to the point, those are major teams that have probably below 500 records in their conference or right at. You know what? I'll say this. If they would guarantee me more smaller conferences get in, because you put the Missouri Valley in every year and they do something. They win games in the tournament. They did this year. They got to the Final Four, as a matter of fact. So if you can guarantee me that smaller conferences are going to get more access, I'd be interested in listening, but this isn't what the ACC is thinking. They're trying to get more of their teams in, and you know what? They get plenty in.
Yeah, and they're also, and Tom Noy kind of brought up a point yesterday, that their schedule, like the Big Ten, their schedule is going to go to 20 games here within the next couple of years. So now you're, instead of 9-9 kind of being that magic number, will 10-10 be enough when you add these extra games. I like what you talked about there at the end about the small conferences, because I don't mind an extra four games, because you're basically an extra four games. And that's what they're talking about, another first four sites. You'd keep the one in Dayton, and then maybe you put one out west, whether it's in Phoenix or Tucson or wherever it happens to be, and you have another first four. I like kind of the twist that you put on it there. If you make these games where you've got a big conference team against a mid-major type,
right.
I think that maybe that makes those games a little bit more interesting. And I said this last night when I was talking to Tom, and I think we've talked about it before as well. I'm in favor of even going farther, where all the double-digit games, you've got to play in game, because you're kind of giving an advantage to the single-digit team that they're going to have to play. Where these teams have to play a game just to earn that spot. But I do like that twist. Maybe you expand it to 72, so you've got some extra play-in games. You've got more product to put on TV, for one thing, on those that Tuesday and Wednesday, and you pit some bigger conferences against some mid-majors. I think that maybe that makes things interesting right off the bat.
I like that.
All right. Let's go to some baseball. Fill in the blank on this one. Major League Baseball cracking down on Ben Zobrist, who continues to wear his all-black spikes during day games, despite the rule saying that game-worn shoes have to be at least 51% of the team colors. That is blank.
Why are we worrying about this? He actually does it as a tribute to guys like Ernie Banks and Billy Williams, who wore black shoes. Yet, as a Cardinal fan, Marcelo Ozuna wears a neon yellow arm sleeve every game, and that's okay.
What?
I don't get it. And you know what? Here's the thing, Sean. We're trying to get more of the young generation into the game.
Right.
So we're trying to be so particular on these type of things. I don't understand the thinking of Major League Baseball. They take one step forward and two steps back all the time, and I don't get it.
And that's why I don't get the thing either, because you're talking about the arm sleeve being neon, and I thought maybe because the collective bargaining agreement that this is in, it's only a year old, so they just signed this a little bit more than a year ago. I thought maybe it stemmed from some of these guys wearing the batting gloves with the neon colors that didn't have to do with their team's colors, but apparently that has nothing to do with it. So I don't get it. Here's my question. What if a Colorado Rocky, purple and black obviously are the colors out there, what if a Colorado Rocky wore stars and stripe colored cleats? So he's got basically the American flag on his cleats. Is baseball going to be mad about that like they are Ben Zobrist wearing black on his cleats? I don't see that. So it seems like something so trivial that most of us probably never even realized was going on until baseball brought attention to it. And it just seems really trivial to me.
Remember toward the end of Peyton Manning's tenure with the Colts, he was wearing the black high tops as a tribute to Johnny Unitas, and that wasn't good enough.
No. And the NFL forever has been really backwards with their uniform and stuff. And I don't get why Major League Baseball decided this is the thing, because it goes back to what you're talking about. You're trying to bring in younger fans, and the younger fans tend to like all these unique little things. So why are you discouraging it? It doesn't make sense to me.
I just don't get why neon yellow works for a team that doesn't have neon yellow in their uniform.
But black cleats are a no-no.
I appreciate what Zobrist was doing. Doesn't make any sense.
No, not at all. All right, I saw this today, and I don't know if you've seen it yet. Tampa Bay Rays manager Kevin Cash, he's going to give career reliever Sergio Romo his first career start tomorrow. Have you heard about this?
I have not.
Okay, so the plan is for Romo to pitch an inning or two at the start of the game to theoretically get the Los Angeles Angels sort of off balance, and then they're going to go with the guy who is one of the regular starters, Ryan Yarbrough, after that. And the whole thinking is this: pitcher's going five in the third time through the order, kind of along those lines. So what do you think of Romo, the reliever, being the starter in front of the starter, Ryan Yarbrough?
Boy, this is Brian Kenny's wheelhouse from MLB Network.
That's right.
Who's into all these interesting ways of managing a game, and that's one of them, is to use one of your best relievers in the first inning because you're going to face the best hitters of the opposition in the first inning, so why not use him in that particular spot? Now, I wouldn't call Romo a high-end guy now in the bullpen. A few years ago when the Giants were winning World Series, he was great. That slider was filthy. So, you know, the concept is interesting. You know, I'm a guy that is a big believer in bring in a reliever in a big, high-leverage situation before the eighth or the ninth inning. If it's the fifth inning and there's bases loaded, one out, why not bring in your best guy to try to get a strikeout? So if I believe in that, then I've got to say that it's a really interesting idea, and I want to see how it works out. I think it's a really intriguing way of handling the top of a lineup, including facing Mike Trout.
You know, and this is something that Brendan McKay, for example, the guy that we've talked about before, high pick last year, a two-way type player, Shohei Ohtani, another example, but a guy who can hit and pitch. It'll be interesting to see maybe down the road if some of these guys come into play there. They could start a game, pitch an inning or two, go play first base or DH or whatever, and then come back at the end of the game as well. But for this specifically, it's definitely thinking out of the box. Romo's a guy, almost 600 career appearances. It's going to be his first start, so he's kind of a setup man to the starter right out of the box. It's going to be really interesting to see how this goes. I'm really interested to see it. I mean, so if all goes well tomorrow, these guys go 7 to 8 combined innings, and then obviously they go to the bullpen at the eighth. A bold strategy, and
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I really am too. It's going to be interesting. All right, one last question for
you.
Fill in the blank on this one. Your biggest NHL playoff surprise is blank.
Biggest NHL surprise
playoff blank.
Playoff surprise. The easy answer is Vegas, but they proved so much during the regular season that they were a really good team. I'm really hesitant to go that direction. I mean, if they were the 8th seed and they were under 500 and they caught fire, maybe that's the definitive answer. But I hate to do that because they were one of the best teams in the West going into the playoffs, so I don't want to answer that. So, what's the best story? Boy, that's really hard. I guess the best story has to be the Capitals exercising their demons and finally beating the Pittsburgh Penguins, and now they're kind of following history. They win the first two games on the road in Tampa, then they lose the next two at home, I think. They have won the first two games of a series 8 times, and they've only won the series 3 times. So they're kind of following the script. So I'm gonna hesitate and not go with the obvious Vegas answer. I will say that Washington finally beating Pittsburgh is one of the top playoff stories.
Yeah, I think that's a good one too. My biggest surprise is just what happened with Pecorine and Nashville, the Nashville goalie this year, because he was so hot. Last year, he had a 1.96 goals against average in the playoffs last year, but it ballooned to over 3 this year. I mean, they rode him all the way to the Stanley Cup final last year. They get bounced in the Western Conference semis, and they had to yank him out of there. I think it was 3 different times in that series to Winnipeg. So I was shocked at just how things went after he was so good just a year ago, and the reason they got to the Stanley Cup final last year, he was kind of the reason that they didn't make it this year.
I'm impressed you got the pronunciation right on the button. Look at you.
I try to pay attention.
A closet hockey guy. I can see it now.
That's right.
All right. That's going to do it for Rapid Fire for today, and that's going to wrap up Sports Beat for tonight here on WSBT Radio. And our program is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds by Blackthorn Golf Club and the Blackthorn Card. Just $99, and you can get up to 80% off rounds of golf at Blackthorn, and that includes cart. By Labitt Insurance, the agency that rocks, see why at labittinsurance.com, and Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
You as well. Sound good.
Thank you so much. Brennan King will have the pregame coming up in just a couple of moments. It is South Bend Cubs baseball coming your way next from Parkview Field in Fort Wayne, Indiana. The Cubs and the Tin Caps coming up in a couple of moments on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.